This episode sponsored by Maximus Tribe. You train, you track, you eat right. But if you're over 40, you've felt it. The results don't match the effort anymore. That's not willpower, it's biology. Hormones drop, metabolism slows, your body stops responding the way it used to. Maximus is the online clinic that reverses your decline with prescription performance medicines, GLP-1s, testosterone, and peptides that reduce belly fat, restore energy, and boost recovery. Over 50,000 high performers have already broken through their plateaus. If you're ready to turn your hard work into measurable results, go to MaximusTribe.com. That's MaximusTribe.com.
Hi, everyone.
Harry,
a little
had
bit of a sad
a
update.
Hard time this week.
Yeah, a sad update. My grandma passed away this week. And my grandma is a very important person in my life. Yeah. And she was 95 years old. She's 95 years old. Incredible. Incredible. And she passed away Wednesday morning. We're recording this on Friday. And the most overwhelming feeling that I have right now is gratitude. And I've just been reflecting on how lucky I am. I had a grandma like that. Like, she ruled. Like, she was truly, I'm so sorry. Honestly, I feel just sad for the world because you don't get to meet her. Like, that's what I feel sad about, you know. But I was with her when she left us, which was a humbling experience. But like, my grandma left this world.
Have you ever had anything like that?
Love.
Have you ever like been in a mm-hmm. room with someone? Yeah.
Have you?
No.
My friend who lost her dad, she talked about how much of a privilege it was to be there. Mm. And I'd say the same. There's something about it that allows for closure is the wrong word because you're always going to miss a person. But yeah. to see her go, you know, there was peace at the end. And it was, you know, her body, like, she waited for me to get home. And so I got to tell her I loved her. And I, you know, there was moments where I didn't know if she was comfortable and I was brushing her hair. So, and that seemed to relax her. But I was with her kids, my aunt and uncle, and my mom. And I was, like, half of the cousins were there. And I slept on the floor. Like, you know, nobody could leave. Like, I couldn't leave. I wasn't going to leave. I could spend a whole episode telling stories about her.
But, like, was it, like, home care or was she in the hospital?
No, I got to tell you, my mom has always said, better than having any doctors in the family, have a nurse in your family. And my aunt took care of my grandma. My grandma lived with my aunt, who is a nurse, for 3 years, a little over 3 years. And my grandma had a stroke a little while ago. And she's 95. There was no care that they were going to. There's no fixing that. And so my aunt we kept her home. So she never saw a hospital. At the end of her life, like, she died at home where she was staying at my aunt's house. She never, like, even when the police and the firefighter, because there you have to kind of go through the rigmarole of, like, the firefighters come confirm.
It's been so funny if you were like, when the police came and we found out she was also a jewel thief.
Honestly, can I tell you, my grandma loved to steal shit, so that could totally be happening.
Wouldn't that have been amazing totally if the police came in and they were like, this is
we found her. We found her. No, my grandma loves free shit. She stole all the time. In fact, she never paid for movie tickets. I'll tell this story because she's the matriarch. She's the reason I am the way I am. The reason I'm exactly like my mother is the reason. She's the reason. It's my grandma. And it was one time her and her sister and brother-in-law went to go see Angela's Ashes in the movie theater. Mm-hmm. And she hated paying for tickets. Like even to shows, like when we were growing up to our shows, she'd be like, that's fucking expensive. Also, fuck was her favorite word. She's just one of a kind. And she's like, I'm not paying for that shit. So she would sneak into these movies and the theater was not very full. It was like her and her sister and brother-in-law. And there was like another group, but the movie was supposed to start at 3:30. And 3:30 rolls around and the movie doesn't play. And so they're like, well, what the fuck is happening? So they go to the box office and they're like, excuse me, the movie is not starting. And they go, well, that's because no one paid for it. And I remember asking, I was like, Grandma, what if you get caught? I was like, what if you get caught stealing? She goes, I'm just going to go, where am I? What is going on? I just pretend I don't know where I am.
I like it a lot.
I was like, Grandma, like, yeah, she's... Yeah, but we had 95 years with her. 95 years.
So great.
And her service is tomorrow, and I'm going to speak at it, which I'm not excited about is the wrong word, but like
it feels good.
It's going to, I think I'm excited. I mean, last night we did the photo boards, and so all my cousins, I'm pretty tired because all my cousins and my aunt and uncle were at my parents' house. And so, like, we just were building 12 photo boards of her life. And we just, you know, like, she was such a present part of my life. You know, like, what was amazing about my grandma, she didn't give a shit what people thought. In this, like, real way that I don't know if I totally inherited, but, like, I have to learn from it. But, like, she walked through life just, like, totally herself. Totally authentically herself. And as someone born in the 30s, I just don't know, like, I think that's pretty unique. I think, yeah. Yeah. And she had a tough life for sure, but she was incredibly resilient and she laughed a lot. And, you know, I just am overwhelmed with like gratitude for who she was and how and my relationship with her and how, and how she shaped who we are. And like, and she, again, like, oh, what a way to go. Like, she was surrounded by everybody who loved her. Like,
yeah,
we all were telling her how much we loved her.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you hate to see her go, but you love to watch her leave.
I don't know if I would say I love to watch her leave, but like, yeah, I just was glad I got to see her before she left us. And I got spend time and just tell her I loved her a lot and thanked her a lot. I thanked her a lot.
Yeah, what a great thing to get to have that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so glad you got out there. I'm so glad that the timing just feels like it worked in this way.
Yeah, and she was really thoughtful where she died when I didn't have a show going on. That's always been my fear too.
Thank you, Grandma.
Thank you, Grandma. My fear was always that I'd be like traveling or on the road when it happened. And like, it's kind of amazing. Like, yeah, yeah. So here I am. The good news is my parents are doing construction in their house. So there's like there's like plastic vinyl everywhere. So I have to like duck under things and... like there's not really a bedroom to use, which, you know what, my mom was like, I didn't know this was happening. And I was like, neither did I. Anyway, so that's for anyone who's going through loss. I know we've talked about loss before in this podcast. You're not alone. You're loved. May their memory be a blessing. Find moments of gratitude when you can and be with your loved ones, because I got to tell you, like, my grandma had a very funny sense of humor. She was so fucking funny, like genuinely so. Again, I could regale you with stories of that, but I won't. Maybe that was a special episode. But like last night, my cousins were there and just like being with each other. You see her. You see like the dark humor that permeates. You see just like the belly laughs that happen. It was my cousin's birthday yesterday. Poor cousin. And he walked in and we were like, happy birthday. sorry. And he was like, yeah, my birthday, I did wish for not a dead grandma, but unfortunately.
There's no God.
Unfortunately, it didn't work, but I told everybody the wish, so that's probably why it didn't come true.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. That was why. His
that
fault.
That was why. His, it was his
killed
bad.
Grandma.
Killed grandma. But it was, so like we got to celebrate with him. We sang him happy birthday four times last night.
I love that.
Yeah, just the best. Ugh, I got a good family.
Yeah,
I got a good
do.
Family.
That's so
I do.
Nice.
I really do.
I'm glad you got to be with them.
Me too. Me too. How is studying going for your test?
I'm going to take a practice test again today, but I took like a real practice test that's as long as the real one. And I was up from like, you remember originally I was getting like low 70s, which you yeah. is exactly what you need to pass. Yeah. I got like an 85 on a practice test. And so now I want to take another one today. And if I get around there, like an 85, that will pretty much mean I'm ready. Like I can keep studying, but I can also feel like that's the number you kind of want going into this thing is low to mid 80s. Is like,
this is great.
Yeah. So I'm going to take one today. I have to pay more money to take it, which is like ugh. So intense. But yesterday was career day at my children's school, and Matt and I did a table, and it was so fabulous to see all these different parents where you're like, what? Where do you work? And it's like, oh, I'm just the set designer for the public. Oh, I'm the like head engineer at Audible. Like, it was
wait,
like,
that's so cool.
People had the craziest, coolest jobs. And I didn't even go to every table. And Koa was like, oh, yeah, there was someone there that like draws for Sesame Street. I mean, it was like you could not have picked and curated.
Whoa.
And then our friend Mike, who's a plumber, was there, and kids were like cutting pipe, wearing vests, doing like marble maze to like understand pipes. It was like people made really good tables. There was a vet table, physical therapy. Like it was, there was a nutritionist that had all this cool food. We sat next to grandparents that are a British and an Irish scientist, and they were like cute and old and had cool shit on their table, and you got to like check out a geode and do a dinosaur dig, and we got to chat with them for a bit, and they were like, you know, we just really love the school and our kids.
Wait, Quinn, do the accent. Do the accent.
Oh, I can't. But thank you. But my favorite was Marv that was British was like, we love this school. And he goes, so we like to come here every year. It's just got such good energy. And I was like, yeah. And then he goes, you know what I think to myself when I look around? And I'm like, what? And he goes, Donald Trump would hate this school. And I just love that.
And that's sweet. Really good. That's yeah. really good.
And then afterwards, oh, go ahead.
No, go.
And then afterwards, I had some work to do, but then I went to, there's a Lego after school place in our neighborhood where kids build Lego. And they had an adult event last night from 7 to 9. And I guess not a ton of people booked it because I know the woman that owns it. And she wrote me and some of my neighbors and was like, you guys, some people booked this, but not enough for it to seem like festive and fun. Would you come do Lego from 7 to 9 tonight?
And you said,
I'm going to make,
say less.
She was like, I'm making margs. And I was like, great. So I went from 7 to 9 and had margaritas and did a Lego build. And I had never done a Lego build before. Like I've watched my kids do Lego build, but I've never sat and messed with Lego.
Quinn. It's, I feel the same way when I was younger. I don't think I ever got like a proper one by myself. I do it with my nephews. I feel like you as a puzzle person, I bet you, my assumption is I bet you loved it.
I did love it. I did. I had a blast. The prompt, first we did our names to practice on like a thing. And then she did a thing where she went around the room with a bucket that had characters in it. And you closed your eyes and pulled a character and then did a build around what character you pulled.
Oh, wait, this is a crazy build. So you didn't like do an because I like the instructional build where like you're putting the pieces
no,
together.
No. This is all creative build. She only does creative build.
Wow.
And they like she does sessions for these kids that are like build a machine. Like, but there's no instructions ever. And it's all creative builds. And so we were all like, Nadine drew a construction worker and she ended up doing like this stage with footlights and she did the village people performing and like she made a disco ball. Like, it was very cool.
That's so fun, Quinn.
I drew this guy that looked like he was a tree and he looked mad and he was a tree. And so I built this huge fire that he was standing on and he had a head on a stick, like a Lego head on a stick. And he was like holding a flame and a head on a stick. And then I gave him a bucket with lots of heads and arms in them. And then I filled this field with dying trees that were getting like regrown that had body parts as part of them. And then I just threw lots of body parts all over the field and blood. And basically his story was that people had killed his tree family. So then he was killing them. He was like in it for blood, but he was using their bodies to fertilize the soil to grow back his family. And then I had like this crazy skeleton horse that was sniffing out people that he could kill. And I built like a bunker out of like a stone wall bunker. And then I had two men inside that looked terrified because they were going to get caught. And then I sent the video to Matt and then Matt texted back, oops, didn't know what it would be, showed the kids. And he goes, but they're very proud of you. And then this morning I saw Koa and I said, what did you think of my Lego build last night? And she goes, very creative, very violent. And I was like, thank you.
Oops, showed the kids.
Very, you know, violent.
Very violent. It was very violent. And you go, and you know what? Just take that as a warning. Just take that as a warning.
What I like about my friend is that this is a kid's Lego place, and she put mine in the window.
Wait, Quinn, that is like,
I feel famous.
Quinn, how many other people got in the video in the window?
She just let you pick if you wanted to be in the window. It was not the honor I'm making it sound like, but she did let my violent one go in the window, so...
The way you first packaged that was that she selected it, and I got really impressed. Oh, I was really impressed.
I feel like she selected it. I feel like
I know you like to feel that way.
It's very selectable.
I'm excited to see it. I can't wait for the video that I see it.
Yeah, I'll send you the video. You'll laugh and laugh at the violence.
Oh God, what a time! What a time to be alive! What a time! What a time! By the way, you're listening to Truly
Darkly.
Creepily. I'm Carrie Ipama.
I'm Quinlan Poster. Who goes first?
Quinn, you do. But first, let's hear from our sponsors, if we have any.
Okay.
When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork. Refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer, or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in, all with the style you want and reliability you can count on, so you can get more from your home every day. LG appliances, so much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
Okay, your turn.
I read this story by Alec Friedman in The Atlantic, I think. And
you think?
Yeah. Who can remember what they've done this week, honestly? Alec is 27 years old, and he graduated 5 years ago and has been kicking around California, working at a surf shop, and kind of just being an ultimate chiller. It sounds really fun, actually, his job. He says he gets to give cocktails to tourists that are going on a ferry to Catalina Island. And I'm like, this sounds like a really good.
That sounds great.
Like, your every day is a lot of people's vacation. Why not? Mm-hmm. His parents are a little concerned, it sounds like. They have a vibe of, so what you gonna do with your life? Mm-hmm. And he's like, I don't know what I'm gonna do. So he takes a Coast Guard course at a community college and gets his merchant mariner certificate. He's never worked on a fishing boat, but he's heard that the money is sweet. And it's basically a super intense thing that you sign up to do and you get a bunch of money. And so he's like, this is cool because I'd like to go to Australia and check that out. And I need money to do that. I'm going to do this fishing thing and use my money for that. I've heard that in 3 months you can earn enough to live for the whole year. So pretty good deal.
Wow.
October is when they go fishing for albacore near Washington
State. That's tuna for people who don't know. That's tuna.
They're huge. And massive. You do short trips, like 5-day trips to get trained. And then you go out on the summer and you do a real voyage. So he meets this Captain Michael Diamond, which is a cool name. Great Michael name. Diamond goes by Mick. And Mick is like, welcome to my fishing boat named The Evening. Beautiful name for a boat. We shall do these practice fishing runs together, and then I will take you on your voyage. He gets to know the ship, and it sounded very cinematic the way he wrote it. It's like, I got on the boat after midnight, and it's raining, and I go down to the cabin, and la la la. Because it's raining, it is stormy, so they have to wait a few days for the weather to clear. And so they're cleaning the boat, doing paperwork. And they're watching from the boat, and they see a ship leave the harbor and roll. Like, it's that kind of storm. Yeah.
Roll? So scary.
Pitch and roll. Super scary. And he's like, ooh, okay. I guess I get why we're waiting. Our ship is half the size of that one, and it's made of wood.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's so scary.
They're waiting, and then they get a good forecast that says it's not going to be a lot of wind. It's not going to be a big swell. And Mick's like, you know what? Let's just do a shorty. So he's like, let me teach you for emergency. This is how you use the radio. This is how you send a mayday. This is the channel you're on. This is the lifeboat. This is all the shit that you need to know. And now you're prepped, and let's do this thing. We're going to leave on a Thursday. We're going to be back on a Sunday, Monday at the latest. It's a shorty. So the first day, they do really well on the boat, and they get 2 or 3 dozen fish, which is a good haul. He's already liking it. He's like, this is hard, but I like it also. And I guess you would like it if you were, I mean, has anybody fished before? It's so fucking boring. But if you catch 3 dozen fish in a day, I bet it's not.
Well, I feel like big fishing is probably different. Like,
can't picture. I don't really know what you do, but it's not like reeling it in, right? It's like, well,
I'm like,
is it
deadliest catch? Deadliest catch. That's what I'm.
We had a friend
like,
that was a
sort of making.
We had a friend that was a cameraman on Deadliest Catch.
Isn't that whoa, cool? That's really cool. That must be scary. Yeah.
It's and do you want to know something funny? Don't you picture them eating fish for dinner because they're fishermen? I did. Maybe. I was like, caught all these fish. And then he was like, so then we sat down and had ribeye. And I was like, oh, okay. He goes to sleep that night, and the next day gets up and the boat's wobbly. Mick is starting work, but it's not grayed out. It's not a ton of visibility. It's kind of like hazy and it's windy and they're not catching a lot of fish, just a couple. And so midday, he's like, let's go back inside. And they're both, like, the boat is moving enough that they're both so seasick. And he goes outside, Alec, to get some air. And he says he's standing on the boat, and it's a little boat, and the waves are crashing onto him, soaking him. But he's still like, I'm going to barf. I can't go in. Like, I feel too sick. And they put he's like, we got to get out of here. And Mick's like, agrees. Mick's like, you know what? I'm going to put the boat on autopilot to send us back to the harbor. Ooh, I feel sick too. They're like, this is so gross. They're 20
this
miles.
This is so gross.
They're 20 miles offshore. That means it's going to be a long time before they get to the harbor. And the storm's getting worse. Waves are coming over the rails. One of their coolers of fish gets swept out to sea.
No.
And he's like, there go our sandwiches, which were also in there. A big wave pushes the tip of the boat underwater. And they're like, this is getting dangerous. So Alec gets on the radio that he's been taught to use, and he calls a mayday. What's freaking him out is, imagine he's like a kid, right? In his 20s, and he has this guy that is the old weathered fishing captain. And he's like, Mick, this is bad, right? Mick. And Mick is acting catatonic. Mick is just staring, non-responsive, eyes open, not saying a thing, not clear why. Not clear if he's suffered a stroke. Not clear if he's paralyzed by fear. Not clear at all, but wow. Not saying, not jumping to action and not saying a thing. So he pulls Mick up, puts him in a seat, and he's like, we have to get in a raft, Mick. This boat is probably going under. Let's go. He turns to get the raft, and when he looks behind him, Mick's just still frozen, sitting there, like not following him. And when he turns to look at Mick and sees that, that is the moment he gets knocked into the fucking sea.
Alex gets knocked into the sea?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
He grabs the lid of a piece, or there's like a, something called a fish hold. It's like a piece of wood, but it's made of foam as well. So it's floating. He grabs it and gets on top of it. Picture the door from Titanic.
He's pulls surfing.
Himself. He's swinging. He's a surfer. Why not? He gets himself over to the lifeboat and he pulls the ripcord to inflate it and release it. And it comes off. He climbs inside the lifeboat and he's looking at the boat, trying to make out like, where is the, like, where I sat Mick down, is he still there? And he can't see him, and the boat's on its side. And he's like, where the fuck is Mick? And then the boat starts to sink, and it just goes down in a flash. It's just gone. So he's on this lifeboat, and he's like, where's Mick? I think Mick just died on that boat. It happened, everything I just described to you, like from him being like, Mick, we need to do something, to the boat going fully under is, he says, max 5 minutes.
The crazy thing is that he could access the lifeboat and pull that ripcord. That is crazy to me that he could access it. I don't know how that happened, but
yeah, I can't
really
picture. I wish I had more like visuals on what this looked like, but Mick is gone. Alec is on this.
Oh God. Lifeboat. That's so sad.
To himself, he's like, I called a mayday, right? Yeah, I picked up the radio and I called a mayday. Someone will come. So he is just putting himself on a little ball on this life raft, and he is so traumatized, he does fall asleep. He thinks maybe for like an hour, but it's that, I think it's like your body is like shutting down.
Yeah, the adrenaline.
Down.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
The storm's still going. He wakes up and he's like, okay, what do I have? I have my phone. It doesn't work. I have my wallet. I don't need to buy anything. But the lifeboat is equipped. Like, it has a first aid kit, a razor blade, a fishing kit, 2 emergency blankets, and a bunch of signals, like 4 flares, 3 rockets. Mm-hmm. Oh, and 3 cans of smoke. So those are all for emergency signaling. And yeah, there's a small amount of food, a dozen emergency rations of food. And he describes them as they look like bars of soap and they taste like really oily shortbread. Huh, that's not what I would have pictured. And he has 2 liters of water.
Wow.
So he's like, well, I'm not going to need all this. I called for a mayday. Then he's like, I hope that went through. I don't really know what I'm doing. I hope that went through. And he's like, here's the thing.
Of course he's going through all those thoughts.
The people knew that we were going on this fishing trip. So when we don't come back, and then he's like, well, we left on a Thursday. We said we'd be back Sunday or Monday. The boat went down on Friday. So that is still giving me a pretty long time to do this before anybody's even like, huh. So maybe I'll get rescued Monday or Tuesday. I just have to wait. I just have to wait. I have to get my head in the right place. I have to wait. He spends a lot of time, since there's nothing to do but wait, thinking about Mick and what could I have done differently? Is there a way to get that man off the boat? What the fuck happened to him? Why was he frozen? All these questions. And he's realizing how much your thoughts can take you away. And he's realizing when you don't also know what time it is, all of it's so odd. And you don't know what time it is and it's been stormy. So he said even how dark it was constantly was really hard to pinpoint time. Yeah. So in the name of keeping sanity, he's realizing he needs to have a system and he needs to have order. Wake up, unzip the flap, check the wind and the water, get any water that's accumulated out of the raft. Do a quick watch, which is basically, is there a plane? Is there a boat?
Is there a boat?
Is there land? Yeah. Is there anything I can see that I should be checking out? Take all my clothes off, one piece at a time. Hang it up to try to dry it. They never really fully dry, but I might as well. Because it's not one of those things where the sun's really out. Blow into my valve that
inflates the raft.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say animates, but I pictured then the raft had like a face and was like, hey, Alec. And we're not in crazy town yet. So organize his supplies. But he needs to have all these tasks in front of him to feel
sane.
Yeah. And just to give yourself this stuff that is stuff that you can action, because you are also feeling, I imagine, extremely powerless. It was really hard for him to sleep as well. He has this emergency blanket, but it's worn to shreds instantly. And like the, you know how it has like reflective stuff on it, these emergency mm-hmm. blankets? It's like ripping. It's just not really working, to a point where eventually he's like, forget this. I'm just going to use the dry bag, which is the size of a pillowcase. And he would like bundle his body up into a tiny little ball so it could use this pillowcase. He's praying. He's speaking out loud, praying to God. And he said he's apologizing for anything he has ever done in his whole life that he can remember. Oh God, please let my parents forgive me. They're so mad at me right now for even doing this. And now I'm here and they're not going to see me again. They're going to be so mad at me. He has just a lot of guilt. He sees a ship. He believes it's been 5 or 6 days when he sees this ship.
Wow.
And he launches one of his flares. And he's like, the ship is so close. It feels there's no way they won't see me. And they don't see him. So he wastes a flare and watches the ship disappear, which must have been so disheartening. He can read the writing on the ship. Like, that's how close it is, and they don't see
him. Oh, my God. The hope that is lost in that moment must be just so overwhelming.
And once he realizes it's been about a week, he feels like he now knows that Mayday signal never went out or was received, because it just feels like someone would have been looking by then, and it doesn't feel like anyone's looking. So he's so thirsty because he's been rationing his water. Mm-hmm. And there's something in him in that moment that low-key gives up, and he just drinks what he wants to drink. I'm thirsty, and I'm going to drink. Oy. So now he has no water. He says this is when he starts to hallucinate, and he can't tell during this period of time what was a dream and what was him awake and hallucinating. But he has this waking dream that the life raft he's on washes ashore, and he's at a pond, and he gets out of it, and he's walking through all these reeds and mud, and he sees a small house, and his friend is sitting at the house on the porch waving, and he's like, hey. And then he's like, oh, I'm so embarrassed. I'm so wet. I'm so dirty. I look like hell. Like, I'm really gross looking. So to his friend, he's like, hey, my car broke down. I'm just going to go into town to get a screwdriver, so I'll be a little late. And Jack's like, oh, don't worry. Take your time. Take all the time you need. And he gets back in the life raft and falls asleep.
Oh, my God.
And that's his dream. Suddenly, one day, he has the sensation someone's in the life raft with him, witnessing mm-hmm. all of this. And he's like, who is it? I need to know the name. And the name comes to him, and it's Iobi. And he's like, I'm so glad Iobi is here to witness what's happening to me. Even though Iobi is totally silent and totally invisible, it's really good to be witnessed.
Mm.
And that helps him. He's looking in the water, and when he sees fish, he'll like wave to them, be like, hey, hey, fish. He collects some rainwater he's able to drink. He catches a really tiny fish and he eats it to the bone. Sometimes he thinks he sees land and he'll paddle towards it, but he's like, I can't tell if that's a mirage. I just have no idea. But even when I paddle for hours, doesn't look like I get closer. I could still see what I think is land, but I don't feel I'm moving. He has at this point seen enough ships going by and shot some shit off that he has one flare left.
Oh, goddamn.
And he says he would hold on to it like he was holding on to his life. This is it for me. During the day, the sun is out and it is now making him warm, but at night it's freezing and his clothes are still damp. They never have dried. So he'll shake so hard he can't sleep. So he's like, oh, even though it's a bad idea, sometimes it's a good idea for me to sleep during the day, because even though that might be when I would see a ship, it's the only time I'm warm enough to sleep. So one day he's thinking about that and he's like, I think I want to take a nap, but I should open the flap and do my visual check really quick first. And he goes and he checks and he sees a boat. And he's like, I don't know if it's real because of my mental state, but hope it is, because I have to in this moment decide whether it's real and use this flare or not use this flare. And it's my last flare. It's my last one. So before using the flare, he just screams. He's just like screaming and waving and hurting his voice and screaming and screaming and screaming. And then the boat is as close as it's going to get. And he lights the flare and he's holding it up. And he lets it burn all the way down till it burns his hand. And then he drops it, but he keeps screaming. And then he finally runs out of breath. And he stops.
Oh, my God.
And it's silent. And in the silence, he hears this voice say, we see you. We're coming. We see you. And the boat comes up and lowers a ladder to him. And he gets on the boat. And this guy is like, here's some food. Here's some clothes. And he's just eating and crying. And he's like, where am I? And they're like, you drifted. The land that you saw was Vancouver Island.
Oh my God. He drifted that far north?
Is 150 miles away from where they had started.
Wow. And
the captain that saves him says, this is so scary, is like, I've actually seen life rafts on the ocean before and gone to sea to like rescue, and they've always been empty. How long have you been on the raft? And he's like, what day is today? And he tells him, and he's like, 13 days. So he was at sea for 2 weeks.
Oh,
the Canadian Coast Guard brings him the shore, and like doctors look into him because they're like, you're in pretty bad shape, you're pretty dehydrated. He's looking at himself, he's like, I am very skinny. They get him across the border to the U.S. and they ask him some questions. They get him on a bus to Seattle, and then he flies to Baltimore, and he's home. He's back in the States. They never find Mick's body.
Oh.
But Alec goes to Mick's memorial and meets his kids, and they talk about, the kids at the memorial talk about how one time they were in Hawaii surfing and Mick was standing in the ocean and this huge wave came and knocked him down. And so the son was surfing, went to go check on his dad, and he says, he was on the beach and he was soaked, but he was still holding his cigar and it was still somehow lit. Which is like just a great funeral story. And Alec was just saying like he felt really guilty, of course. And like,
of course.
For him, it's that question that I think a lot of us would ask. Why me? Why did I survive this and Mick didn't? Why did it happen to begin with?
Right.
And he says, and the truth is, I still don't know what I'm going to do with this life that I've been gifted, but I'm glad I have it.
Wow. I mean, you hear those stories and just like the amount of miracles that have to happen to be found is really uncanny. Like, it's just wild.
Yeah. Whew. Would also just be so weird to be a person that thinks the way you go is being out at sea, like shipwrecked and on a raft. Like,
well,
that is always,
like,
that would always be like,
too.
Really? This is how I go? This is crazy.
It's also really wild, too, because there are moments where he probably felt jealous of Mick in some ways. You know, obviously, like, you can't, you know, he had hope and he had the possibility to live. But Mick went pretty quickly. And here he is 13 days in going, will I survive this? Will I? And every day is the question. Will I survive this? Ugh. Wow, what an incredible article that you read. It sounds like it was amazing.
Yeah, it's a really good article. You know me, I've got that Atlantic thing cooking, so I'm...
So we're mining the Atlantic.
Yeah. It's great, though. Might have to just keep re-upping it. It's really good stories. Really good writing.
Thank you for telling that. I love a little good news story in that capacity. Okay, I got this information from Chillicothe. I don't know how to say it, and I didn't look it up. Gazette, WBNS, which is a CBS outlet, NBC, and People magazine. I'm going to take you to Columbus, Ohio. There's this guy, Fritz Schaefer, and he meets Victoria when he's 30 years old, and he says it was love at first sight. The two immediately became best friends. They fell in love. They got married. She goes from working at a temp agency as someone who places temps to becoming head of HR for a paper mill. All the while, she's gone back to school. She's accrued 2 degrees. The couple has 4 kids, and she's an incredible photographer. And that's one of her jobs as well. So she takes pictures of people. I think it seems like she does like student portraits or things like that. But there's this anecdote. It's Sunday, September 1st, and she's 44 years old, and she's with her husband at the end of the day, and she's like lying and they're cuddling. And she tells him, she's like, you know what? I'm the happiest at the end of the day lying in your arms. And her husband's like, that's so nice. That's really sweet. So the next day on September 2nd, Victoria is in Hocking Hills State Park, and she's at the stairs of this place called Old Man's Cave. And she's with a bunch of students and she's taking pictures of them. So she's at the foot of these steps and they're all together. They're smiling. They're taking pictures. When suddenly a log falls from above. It's a 6-foot log and it's 74 pounds. It falls from the cliff above her and it lands on Victoria while she's taking photos, killing her immediately. She is obviously not alone. There are students nearby. There are kids nearby that are just out of range. But this log falls on this woman, kills her immediately. Emergency vehicles are called. They pull up. She's announced dead on the scene. Investigators start looking at what happened. And was it an accident? Was it a freak moment? And they start to survey the area and they realize that the log did not fall accidentally. It was pushed. The area where the log came from was empty. They didn't know anyone. They didn't see it. There were no culprits. There was nobody there to say, hey, I did. Nobody knew who did it. And so her family is living for 5 weeks without knowing what happened and who pushed the log. I don't know how these kids were found. It's possible they were talking about it at school. But they're able to narrow in on 17-year-old kids, Jordan Buckley and Jaden Churchhouse. Apparently, but the boys were not alone. They were with 2 other people, Miranda Spencer and another unnamed person. Miranda Spencer was 19 at the time these logs were pushed, and she recalls that they did it to be funny, that it was a prank.
Yeah, of course. I mean, they weren't like, let's go murder someone.
Once the log fell, a man runs past them and says, oh my God, a woman has been killed. And according to Miranda, they all tried to go to the scene, but they took a wrong turn and they left the park as the emergency vehicles were pulling up and they didn't say anything to anyone. Miranda will testify later against Jaden and Jordan, and she said that when she was in the car, the two of them were in the back seat, and it seemed like they didn't care. Jaden said, I caught my first body at 17, and he laughed. She said, like, I remember that. In the initial investigation, there's a video of this. It's the police interrogating the boys, and both boys denied knowing that this woman was killed. And eventually in these interrogations, they separated and each of the boys blame one another for doing this. There are also reports in some of these articles that these boys showed little to no remorse, that in the 5 weeks between her death and when they were interviewed, they were selling drugs in a high school bathroom. Apparently, there's rumors that they were members of a gang. I do not know, but they were bragging about what they did. In the determination of charging these 17-year-old boys, they were going to be tried as adults, and they were charged with murder and reckless homicide, both charges. While the trial came to pass, their attorneys ended up negotiating a plea deal. And so the boys ended up pleading guilty to involuntary manslaughter, which is obviously a lesser charge, but it's still a first-degree felony. And part of this plea deal was that the other two charges of murder and reckless homicide were dropped. And it also called for the case to be turned over to juvenile court for sentencing. So it allowed them to be charged as minors or sentenced as minors. Both of these boys were classified as serious youth offenders, and the prosecutors recommended that they serve a minimum of 3 years and a maximum of 4.5 years, leaving them out when they're 21 years old. In the end, the boys were given a 3.5 year sentence, and that they should leave juvenile detention at 21, which I think once that's finished, they might have a hearing and see if they need more punishment. Basically, what it said was, they were given a 3 to 4.5 year suspended sentence in the Hocking County Court, which is stayed pending completion of the juvenile sentence. Miranda Spencer, who testified against them and became a star witness, she's also been charged with one count of obstruction of justice, which is a third degree felony, because she didn't come forward and she didn't help after the fact. But this story came up because of this idea of these kids doing horrible pranks that have real life consequences. And there's something that feels so unsettling to me about that, because a prank, you're doing it to sort of like one up each other or seem cool, and these real life consequences that come from it. And there's a recent case I want to highlight that has not gone to trial, but it just happened March 6th, 2026. So less than a month ago. There's a teacher named Jason Hughes. So this, I got this from the New York Times. There's a teacher, Jason Hughes, who's 40 years old, and he's a teacher in Gainesville, Georgia. He teaches at North Hall High School, and he loves his students. He loves his students so much. And he finds out that some of his students are going to come over to his house to teepee it. And so, like, you know, I feel like if you're a teacher, I feel like I would do the same thing, as I'd be like, okay, they're coming. I'm going to let them have their fun. And his plan is to go and scare them after the fact. You know what I mean? And be like, I got you, or chase them out or whatever. And so it's Friday night. His students go to his house and they TP his house. They're getting toilet paper all over the trees, all over the house. And Jason is actually in the house watching them. I mean, it has to be so fun to see people giggle and feel like they're getting someone, and seeing, like, that has to feel fun, I think. I don't know.
For sure.
And so he's planning on sort of surprising his students at the end and chasing them out. So he sees the end of the prank is near, and he runs outside, and the students are like, ah, like, he got us. And so they all run over. I think it's four boys. I don't know. But they run over to one of their cars. They get in, and it's raining and it's really slippery. And Jason Hughes ends up tripping and falling, and he falls into the street. And the boys, in their frenzy, they pull out in their pickup truck and they run over Jason Hughes, killing him.
Oh.
Jason is dead, and these kids are traumatized, and they're in the process of discussing charging, and I believe Jason Hughes' family is asking for these boys to not be charged with his murder.
And I saw this because on the news, they were like, that's the last thing he would have wanted. That's the last thing he would want.
Exactly. He was like, his whole life was spent supporting these kids, teaching these kids, and loving these kids, and the last thing he would want is for them to be charged and their life to be affected in any way. It's a horrific accident. But I think it's up to the DA. Like, I don't know if it's up to the family to determine if they will or will not be charged. It, again, like the same feeling. And I think in the first story, it seems like the kids are painted as these like nefarious kids who are like wanted to cause mayhem or didn't show remorse. But I was curious at this idea of like pranks gone wrong, where I know the feeling of frenzy and excitement of someone chasing you and you running away. And I think I like, even as kids, we can identify when kids feel excited and then they hurt themselves. And that like immediate crash of like, you know, Griffin and Koa, it's like, we're all running, we're all chasing around, and then someone gets hurt. And that feeling of like pure joy to the dread of an injury or someone getting hurt is like a very, it's a feeling. I know that feeling. And so in this story, I just was totally shocked that, or not shocked, I was so upset for these kids of the joy of, you know, TPing your teacher's house to the reality that teacher is gone. It's unimaginable to me.
Like, it's not something that's going to get fixed or go away your whole life.
No. Ugh. And his family is, I mean, they're dealing with this like immeasurable loss, and these kids are dealing with the loss. They're like, it's like that feeling of like, as much as the family can say, please don't charge these kids, the kids are being punished by just the reality of the situation. And it, I just thought it was just, it makes me sick to my stomach, honestly. And that feeling of like accidental harm. Oh God. Cause it's so scary. It's so scary. So those were two pranks that went wrong. And like the intention, I think it's with, as a kid, you act without consequence in some ways, cause you think everything's going to work out. And when it doesn't, ugh, it just makes me feel sick. It makes me, that's the deepest fear. That's the deepest fear. It's like hurting someone totally unintentionally. Like, I don't, that to me feels like that's accessing a profound fear of mine.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I those mean, are some stories of pranks gone wrong.
Yeah. So wild. What a story.
Yeah. Should we stop recording so we could record another episode?
Of course.
Okay. Hey, we'll see you next week. Thanks for being here. Go hug your loved ones.
Give them a snugs.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, dear readers.
This episode sponsored by Maximus Tribe. You train, you track, you eat right. But if you're over 40, you've felt it. The results don't match the effort anymore. That's not willpower, it's biology. Hormones drop, metabolism slows, your body stops responding the way it used to. Maximus is the online clinic that reverses your decline with prescription performance medicines, GLP-1s, testosterone, and peptides that reduce belly fat, restore energy, and boost recovery. Over 50,000 high performers have already broken through their plateaus. If you're ready to turn your hard work into measurable results, go to MaximusTribe.com. That's MaximusTribe.com.